Good morning. The next use of the Tacoma Fire Station at 9th and A Streets will be discussed at today's City Council study session. A new headquarters building is being constructed in the Fawcett Urban Renewal Area for the Fire Department, and the old station, a handsome heritage from the turn of the century, is now sought by the Tacoma Art League for its museum. Other organizations have expressed interest in acquiring the building, or at least the site, which commands one of the best views in the state. The City Council discussed the question briefly and informally about 2 months ago, primarily in connection with the effect of the proposed A Street spur on the location. That's the spur that runs from the, that may run from the freeway over to 7th. There is some fear that the engineers will want to plant the whole site to concrete. The Tacoma Land Company, when it platted downtown Tacoma 90 years ago, wantonly wasted the marvelous view available in town. The developers wrung every penny they could out of the land by selling the lots in narrow blocks and leaving nothing for open space or greenery. It was a short-sighted policy which has cost downtown Tacoma merchants dearly across the years, and has left the citizenry short-changed in enjoying the natural beauties of commencement. Now, at the very moment that the new Tacoma Urban Renewal Project promises to provide vistas and viewpoints and greenery downtown, the engineers threaten to erect new barriers between the city and the waterfront. Architect Alan Little warned the Civic Arts Commission of the dangers last week. County Commissioner Pat Gallagher tended to shrug off the battle as probably already lost. And the engineers do have powerful arguments for expediency in construction of the spur. It will be a hard fight to get federal funds for this one anyway. And a concern for aesthetics might raise the immediate cost of the project. But the federal government has begun to pay attention, at least in lip service, to beauty and delight. And certainly no one should be able to speak with greater authority on the high cost of built-in ugliness than a downtown Tacoma merchant. The agenda for the regular council meeting tomorrow afternoon is dominated by an appeal against the Planning Commission's denial of a proposed change in the zoning ordinance which would permit a high-rise office building at the Tacoma Mall site. Central Offices Incorporated of Portland proposed to put up a building and garage on a 7-acre site in the corner of the mall adjacent to 43rd and Pine. They own the site. John Levitt, the company president, asked the planners to change the regulations which limit buildings at the mall to 75 feet in height. He asked that the limit go up to 125 feet. This would permit construction of a 9-story building with an elevator storage penthouse and an underground garage. Although Mr. Levitt argued that the basic reason for the change was that it would permit what he called more efficient design principles, he acknowledged that it would also permit greater floor space. Downtown interests at the zoning hearing argued against the change on the ground that the mall rezoning had been granted in the first place for the creation of a shopping facility, not for a satellite city center. The change in height restrictions, they feared, could create a rival area to downtown for office space as well as for merchandising, and this might yank the financial underpinning from the new Tacoma Urban Renewal Project, which is designed to revitalize the downtown area by providing parking space for shoppers and office workers, and which has already led to the announcement, but not the actual commitment to construction, of major new office buildings. Planning Commission members accepted these arguments against the change in height limit, and they added a few arguments of their own, centering around the growing traffic problem created by the mall as a shopping center. a problem which they do not wish to see compounded by forcing the shoppers to compete with office workers for space on the streets approaching the mall. The council's representative on the Planning Commission, Dick Haley, observed at the time of the hearing that if there were any change in zoning, it should be to eliminate office space altogether in the regional shopping center areas, rather than to make it easier to put up office space. Mr. Leavitt would seem to have his problems cut out at tomorrow's appeal hearing. The Academic Senate of the University of Puget Sound meets at 4 this afternoon to consider the faculty position on the decision of the UPS Board of Trustees not to rehire Dr. Robert C. Lee for the coming school year. The decision was made on the recommendation of President R. Franklin Thompson. The decision came 2 months after the accepted period for notifying a faculty member that he would not be rehired for the coming year. The UPS chapter of the American Association of University Professors voted 33-0 last Thursday to ask the administration to reconsider its action. A representative of the American Federation of Teamsters, AFL-CIO, which has visited the campus to review the possibility of strike action. The AFT has only nominal representation on the UPS campus, but a strike, if recognized by the Central Labor Council, could cut off supplies and limit the building program. And student petitions protesting the firing remain in circulation. This afternoon's meeting of the Academic Senate will be to consider a report from an ad hoc committee of 5, which was appointed by the Senate to study the problem. The committee is composed of Dr. John Lance, the president of the AAUP chapter, Dr. John McGee, Dr. Brewster Coulter, Dr. Tom Sinclair, and Dr. Robert Springer. It is anticipated that the report will go beyond the mere question of the tardiness of the administration's action with regard to Dr. Lee. Tardiness was the only issue considered by the AAUP members in their deliberations last Thursday. The fact that the firing came 2 months after the mid-December deadline, but only a few weeks after Dr. Lee had sponsored an advertisement signed by 17 other faculty members, urging an end to the bombing of North Vietnam and a start of peace negotiations, has led to the assumption by some students, some faculty members, and some outsiders that Dr. Lee is being punished for having taken a stand on a matter of public interest. One theory prevalent on the campus is that President Thompson was worried that the advertisement would offend possible donors to the campus building fund, that he panicked and pushed for Dr. Lee's dismissal. It is understood that Dr. Robert Bach, the dean of the faculty, in outlining the possible consequences of the firing to the trustees at a meeting on February 15th, warned of the possibility that the action would be interpreted as yielding to outside pressure and would raise the question of academic freedom. On the other hand, it is evident that Dr. Lee's personality has graveled not only the administration, but a number of his colleagues, though there appears to be no challenge to his competence in the classroom. The firing of Dr. Lee and the controversy surrounding it is not expected to ease the problem faced by UPS, along with other small schools, in recruiting and keeping faculty members. There has been a fairly high rate of turnover among young faculty members at UPS in recent years. Some attribute it to a general pervasive atmosphere of paternalism and what some call anti-intellectualism on the campus. Others to the fact that while starting salaries are fairly good at UPS, those for full professors are relatively low, causing other pastures in the groves of academe to look greener to the young faculty members. It is against this background that the Academic Senate meets this afternoon to review the report of the ad hoc committee, and it is expected that the Senate will go beyond the question of whether Dr. Lee's firing was a violation of the time limit. It may involve ways in which the faculty can be kept informed and perhaps even consulted and asked for advice on policy matters in the future. Incidentally, of the 5 members of the ad hoc committee, whose report will be the basis for today's study, 1 signed the advertisement urging an end to the bombing of North Vietnam. The other 4 signed the administration-blessed counter-advertisement, which equated the first ad with advocating appeasement of Hitler before World War II. I'll be back in a moment with more local news.